But what we're going to say is a panel from non-profit. That's what we're going to start off with. Our theme this year, similarities and non-differences, okay? So we've got some amazing people here. We've got Patsy from Tulsa.
Yes.
We've got Ricky from Oklahoma City. And then we've got Dickie from Hot Springs. So if you would, just give them your undivided attention. And this is kind of an interactive panel. So what we're going to do is I'll leave this up on the little stand there. At the end, if you have questions, right, or if there's just something you're just dying to ask them in the middle of their talking, raise your hand. You know, just don't throw stuff at them. But yeah, we're going to start off with Miss Patsy. So y'all just give them our attention. Thank you.
Am I on there? Okay.
There you go.
My name's Patsy and I'm an addict.
Hi, Patsy.
My clean date is August 6th, 2020. So I'm a little bit over 4.5 years.
Woo-hoo!
So I guess a little bit, the topic being similarities rather than differences. When I came into Narcotics Anonymous this time, the only time I really consider myself being in a program of recovery, because the first time I was introduced in treatment, I didn't really follow through with what I needed to do. I was doing it for my family that time. This time it's for me. This time I finally hit my rock bottom. I was 47 when I came in, and of course that right off the bat I felt like it was a difference. Because there are so many, you know, younger people in Narcotics Anonymous in my area. I'm also, my story is about, I have a master's degree and educated and all the opportunities in life. And I, you know, when I came in, I felt like that separated me. I mean, I'm just being honest. And it was really easy to look at everybody and just think I didn't belong. But at the end of the day, I absolutely belonged. So when I could wrap my mind around...
I'm going to trade you.
Okay, is that better? Okay. So after reading a little bit of literature and the fog clearing, you know, that was when I could actually start seeing some of the similarities. You know, when I was at the end of the road, I was absolutely desperate. I had lost everything. I'd lost my home, my car, my career. You know, and that was what it really finally took, was the loss of everything for me to realize that I needed to do something different in my life. I had been a nurse since the age of 20, and at 57, it had finally caught up with me. And during I started using drugs as a teenager, and I thought, you know, the rules didn't apply to me, and as long as I made good grades, and as long as I did the next degree and the next degree, you know, and had everything on the outside look fine, you know, I was what I considered a functional addict. So, you know, but at the end of the day, I finally found NA and my sponsor. When I finally sat down and got really serious and read the literature and did some step work, the fog cleared and I was absolutely able to see the similarities. Even within myself, I felt the desperation, I felt the pain, I felt the hopelessness. You know, I was ready to do something different. Before that, I just lived in denial. I thought the rules didn't apply to me, was a master manipulator, and it really took basically the DEA ripping away my nurse practitioner license from me. But in saying that, I thought, you know, people that have a degree like me are not brought to their knees by drugs, but absolutely. I did all the nevers. You know, I had my own medical office, and I was shooting dope in the back. I mean, that's just absolute insanity. So if that doesn't qualify me for the disease of addiction and needing Narcotics Anonymous, then I don't know what does. Anyway, I will say that, you know, I got to Narcotics Anonymous by being told I would never practice in the medical field again unless I went through this program. You know, the things I've learned in recovery is that we all are brought here because of our pain, because of the unmanageability, because we want to do something different. And that's, you know, that's where the similarities came in for me. In the beginning, nothing makes sense, but I was so desperate that I was willing to do whatever my sponsor told me. I knew my sponsor from active addiction, and seeing her have the recovery that she had and the peace and the serenity that she had and the unconditional love and the service that she was doing, I wanted that. You know, I wanted to be similar to her for sure. So, anyway, for me, this, you know, it's an honor to be able to speak on this. I do know that at 4.5 years clean, things are finally starting to make sense. So I, in the beginning, I did try to see the differences. I wasn't able to even see the similarities. Today, it is a big, focus of mine because I'm, you know, to the point now where I'm a sponsor and, you know, I've learned some spiritual principles. I can act on those. And the one that comes to my mind the most when we're talking about similarities and not differences is empathy, because I have empathy for the struggling addict today. I have empathy. It doesn't matter how much clean time you have. I have empathy for the struggling addict today. I don't know, I love Narcotics Anonymous. I'm very active in my area. And I do know that being in service is gonna also give me, it gave me a big dose of, you know, working with my similarities and not differences. You get a whole lot of different personalities there. And so that was part, but that was what was taught to me early, is that service work will save my life. So early on, I got into service work. I was a GSR in my home group, like within 3 months. You know, so I just got a big dose of this program, and I'm that dope addict that was high every day. So I do all the things. I do recovery every single day. And, you know, I have to be careful not to compare myself or compare my recovery. You know, I'm not here to judge anyone's willingness. I'm not here. You know, I'm here to know what you want to do about your problem and how I can help. And that is the main similarity that I think is the most important, you know. But my ego was really, it was so funny that my ego was so big when I look back now when I came into the program, but I was also petrified of what everyone else was thinking about me and looking at me and all that. But then again, I'm, you know, thinking, oh, well, you know, I had all this stuff, and that makes me different, and it does not. At the end of the day, we're all just here to fight the disease of addiction together. And I don't know, I will say that I was kind of put on the spot to be on this panel, and I am very nervous, but so I just know that the steps have saved my life. The steps are, you know, my sponsor is a big step worker. So, you know, from the get-go, I started working steps, and I have worked around the steps, and now I'm trying to work traditions. And that also helps me love y'all more. You know, after I did the work on me, which was my steps, then I can, you know, open my heart more, and I become a lot softer with the prayer and meditation, and actually putting some of the principles I've learned into practice. That makes, you know, the similarities come into focus a lot more than the differences that were very apparent to me in the beginning. You know, and at the end of the day, one of the things I'm working on today is to be more welcoming, you know, make sure that that person that comes into Narcotics Anonymous today feels welcome. I'm also, like, trying to focus on helping other women. I'm sure that people have a similar story of when I first came into Narcotics Anonymous, I really had no desire to hang out with and get to know the women. And a lot through my step work and through watching my sponsor and trying to, you know, be like her, today that is where my focus is. You know, I have a home group, I'm there consistently when the doors are open, and when I see that new woman in there, you know, scared like I was and sitting by herself, you know, it's very important that I go up and welcome her to make her feel included and to make her feel, you know, even if it's just that hug, to make her feel similar to me and let her know that I feel her pain and that I am here to help. Anyway, since we're doing this as a panel and we're going to take questions and all that, those good things, I think I'm going to take a break now. And if anyone does have questions, we can do that, or I can pass the microphone.
Do it at the end.
Okay, we'll do it at the end. I'm going to pass the microphone to Ricky.
I was told we needed to sit in the middle chair for the audio, for the video recording. Oh. Were you bullshitting me?
I think so.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway. So anyway, I'm an addict. My name's Ricky. Man, I'm really, really grateful to be clean today.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I was telling Patsy on the well here, I said, shit, I haven't even really given any thought to anything I'm going to say except for one experience that I experienced early on. And that's okay, too. So, similarities rather than differences. I've heard that many, many times. Focus on the similarities, not the differences. It's in our literature. But my first experience with being able to do that was, I first got clean in 2001. And it had to have been early on, because I think it was the very first speaker meeting at my original home group back in North Alabama, the Freedom Group. Where this guy named Rusty Bright was sharing his story. And he helped a lot of people learn how to stay clean. He passed away about a year and a half ago. And on his way to see another one of his sponsees up in Minnesota. And so I remember Rusty sharing about the fact that, like, in the middle of his story, he's talking about how that he was sitting at an old Chevron bathroom, a gas station bathroom, the bathroom that's around the side of the gas station, you know, and you have to go around in the rain or whatever and use the bathroom. And so he said he remembered sitting backwards on the toilet trying to get that last shot of dope with his daughter, 7-year-old daughter, knocking on the door out in the rain. And when he got done at the end of his share, after the meeting, I went up to my sponsor and I said, I don't think I've ever been that desperate, that bad. And he reminded me very quickly of what I had told him about that desperation prayer of sitting in my living room with nothing but the light of the fish tank on, crying and asking God to help me stop using.
Yeah.
And to please put some people in my life that could help me and could understand me. So when he related it that way, I could see the similarities in the desperation of using against my will and all that, right? And I was also thinking a little bit about, there's a book that I read that was written by a Narcotics Anonymous member on his perspective of how the basic text got written. And in one part of that book, he talked about they were sitting around a table trying to decide what the very first line of the basic text was going to be. as a literature committee. They're trying to decide together. And one thing that was brought up, one idea, was pain is our common denominator. And I think we can all identify with that. The pain of active addiction, the isolation, the powerlessness, using against our will, the hopelessness, not feeling like there was ever going to be a way out, and the helplessness. You know, I think we all can identify somewhat with all of those things, and how that active addiction took us to some places we did not want to go and kept us a lot longer than we wanted to stay. So, you know, I think we say it so nonchalantly a lot of times, similarities rather than the differences. So those have been some of my, you know, that was one of my early on experiences. And as I've stayed in the program, now let me say this. You have to kind of do some addict math on my clean date, okay? I first got clean in February of 2001. Screwed around for about 9 months, worked around the steps and stayed clean for nearly 5 years, and stopped working the program, went back to a pain doctor and used pain medications, going to meetings and trying to make the program work for me for 9 years. Wow. Man, it passed by like that too, you know? So my clean date today is 6/20/16. Like 8 years, 8 months, and some days. You know, by the grace of God, I have not had to use against my will. Now that desperation I was talking about, I got to re-experience that on a deeper level. Okay? In June of 2016, after working a round of steps, I was sitting in my half bathroom in my house alone with my son asleep in the other end of the house. And it was just me and him living there at the time because my fiance had gotten tired of watching me kill myself. And she gave up like others had done before. And I remember trying to use the last bit of drugs that I had and looking at my body and seeing the destruction that I was causing to myself physically and saying out loud, just like this, why can't I stop? This was after working a round of steps, okay? This disease is always willing and able to take me back to the places I don't want to go. And luckily, I was able to call my sponsor that next morning and say, I need to come to your house. So that next day was the 19th. I went to his house. Met him at his work. He got off around 9, 10 o'clock at night. We went to his house. And on 6/20/16, I picked up my last white key tag in Scottsboro, Alabama. I feel like I've had that just right ass with him. I don't believe that I ever have to use again. I never have to use again. And that's different than the way it was before when I would say, I don't ever want to use again. There's a difference. When I can say, instead of, I don't want to use anymore, I don't want to use again. When I can actually say, there's power in the first step, right? The basic text tells me that step one means we never have to use again, just for today. So when I can say I never have to use again, I know what I mean. I know what I mean. I know the difference in saying it both ways. Right? There's some power in that. And there's some freedom that comes with step one in my life today. You know, this the second 30th annual. I don't know if any of you guys that saw that, but if you don't know the story, ask Rob. He can do it with visuals. But anyway, I had to ask. I'm like, I gotta know the story. You know, that kind of stuff. And the story is really cool. I don't have time to go into it, but the story is really cool because it helps us to remember where we came from. You know, what our predecessors have done for us. If you got here before me, thank you. Thank you for staying and making my path easier and wider. And if you got here after me, I'll do the same for you that was done for me. And then you can do it for the next people. That's how this thing stays alive. We just keep passing down the right information. My sponsor told me really early on. He said, I'm going to give you the right information, the best that I can. He said, because I'm going to forget and I'm going to need you to remind me. We're notorious for forgetting, right? We need reminding because the obsession and compulsion takes over every part of me sometimes. And I need someone to remind me. I have a sponsee that prays. He said that he prays for me every day. He said that he prays that I would have, discernment. I said, man, you keep praying that. I told him one day, I said, I don't know if you told me that out of self-preservation or you're praying it really for me. Yeah, because he needs the right information too, right? I need to discern what that is. So it works both ways. And, you know, it came time for me to make a major move in my life. Similarities rather than differences. I started seeking out my predecessors. Listen, I'm going to share something with you guys. I'm going to share a very simple truth with you that will save you a lot of difficulty if you are able to follow this course of action, okay? Our predecessors are waiting for us to come to them. And the basic text tells me as much. It says we freely share our experience, strength, and hope when asked. If I'm going through any new thing in my life, I can go to the ones that have got here before me and have some decades clean, and I can say, what did you do in this situation? When you went through this change in your recovery, how did you deal with it? Like learning how to fit in a new home group in a whole different part of the country. And learning and being told you need to ask questions rather than make statements. You know, there's a lot of things we all think on the same wavelength, man. We put things in such simple terms for each other, we can always identify with the similarities in what we're sharing with each other one-on-one and in a group. And it's just so crazy how that this thing works with very little of my help. You know? I can't make it without you guys. You guys can make it without me. But I can't make it without you guys. And, you know, it's so simple. I'm going to share this real quick story. I was telling Robin earlier about when I went to the men's retreat, the Arkansas River Valley men's retreat, not this year, but the year before. I was somewhere else this year. And I walked out on the front of the lodge where we were staying down there, and there was a predecessor and a really young guy out there on the porch talking, and the young guy's doing most of the talking. And he was, what I gathered, was telling this guy what he knew about staying clean. The reason I recognize that, because I've done it too. And I'm sitting there listening, and he's talked for about 5 minutes, and I'm just looking off in the woods, and I'm listening. And finally, this guy speaks up, and he says, "Well, you know, I just don't think I can complicate this enough for you to understand it." And so I knew my help wasn't needed, so I turned around and I walked back in. You know, but I really love Narcotics Anonymous. I have such a great passion for getting to know people, and I never meet a stranger, and everywhere I go I still get a phone number. I will get a phone number from here before I leave here. I promise you that. And so, you know, I was given the right information. And as long as we keep doing that, we'll be able to easily identify with it. You know, that's all I have. I love you guys. I'm going to turn it over to my predecessor. Oh, yeah, get over here for the video.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Where'd you go? There you are. Come on over there.
I won't let you sit down. I can't get around here.
Well, then I'll sit down.
I went to my first outside meeting in 1987. The room was full. Every chair had a body in it. And as soon as the prayer was over, a guy got up and started pacing. And he paced the room behind the chairs the whole night. I'm thinking, that guy's crazy. When I get ready to give out the key tags and medallions, I knew a person was getting ready to celebrate 5 years that night. That was one of the reasons I went, and because they let me out of the treatment center, of course. That man that had walked the whole meeting got up and started talking and sharing about the person that was celebrating 5 years. And I found out that night that that person had 15 years clean. He'd had an emotional breakdown because he went to the literature conference, the next to the last literature conference, before the basic text was printed. And he had an emotional breakdown because of all the things that had been shared with him at that time. I went to my next meeting the following Monday, and I looked around the room, and as people started sharing, I started listening so I could pick up on the things they shared about, and I could one-up them. Have y'all ever one-upped anybody? Yeah, well, I did. It's for a long time. But what I did hear was the different perspectives from the places these people had been. Homeless, doctors, people that were, you know, just workers, work for minimum wage, people that had degrees, people that were going to school, people that had just all various different people. And I didn't listen to what they shared. I listened to how they shared it so that what I shared would be a little bit better than theirs. And it lasted for about 6 months with me trying to give all these answers to all these people that had been around for a while, because I knew better and I was going to help them stay clean. I didn't need the program. Almost 2 years clean, I'm sitting at my kitchen table with a pistol. And I put the pistol to my head, and the phone rang. I work for the telephone company. When the phone rings, you pick the phone up. I hadn't picked a phone up in 2 weeks. I hadn't went to work in 2 weeks. I had isolated myself, and I had just about given up on life. I got a phone call from a guy that was 95 miles offshore on an oil rig. I was the 19th number he had on his list. I was the last number, and I was the only person to answer the phone. He was getting ready to jump. If Ed's still living, and I'm not sure whether he is because he has a pretty horrible disease, if he's still living, we're both still clean today. Now, my clean date, since I was following the lead here, is 12/19/87. So I've got 37 years, 8 months, and I used to count them all, but I get tired of counting. What I learned from being around and not having to pick up but one white key tag is I learned how to listen. And I don't listen all the time, because a lot of times I think I know it all. And I want to tell you something. And then, fortunately for me, I'm a little slower than other people with giving information back. And I thank my father for that. My father was a thinking person. He actually sat there and he liked to smoke them King Edward cigars with the little tips on them. And he would be doing a job working, and he would stop, back off from what he was doing, look at what he had done, look at where he needed to go. And when he put that cigar out, he did some more work. And I am just like that. I would like to be able to gather my thoughts before I give information today. I really appreciate what Ricky shared about share when asked, rather than share what I know to start with and then have you just look at me like I'm crazy and walk on out like, man, where'd he come from? And that's okay. I don't mind that, because I have been here long enough to understand the differences between where I was when I got here and where I'm at today. I will tell you that I purposefully orchestrated the order with which we went in because of the clean time that was of each person, not because they had any less to give, but because they have a perspective that's a lot different than what the other person might have. So I'm grateful for both of them, because I think they did a wonderful job. And I would just like to tell you, when you sit around and look in meetings at the people that are in that meeting and you really listen to what they're sharing, you'll notice exactly where they're at. You know, for some time, a long time, I didn't have anybody ask me to sponsor them, and I got pissed. So I went to one of the guys that had been around, that guy had 5 years clean that first day, and I asked him why. And he looked at me and he said, "Don't nobody want to live like you." Ooh, that hurt. But he was right. He was exactly right, because I didn't know how to live clean. I knew how to live because I was still alive. And I was clean, and I had been clean for a while. But I didn't understand anything about living, because until I was about 7 years clean, I didn't complete a set of steps, because I didn't think they were for me. I actually thought they were for y'all. I don't know where that thinking came from, because y'all used to tell me, just keep coming back. And sooner or later, it would get through to me, and it did, that maybe I need to do something different in my life so that I can move on and get further along in what I'm trying to do for me. If somebody asks me to sponsor them today, the first thing I tell them is, why me? What do you see in me that even would have you even think about asking me to sponsor you? And they tell me. And then we talk about a little bit about recovery. And I ask them point blank if they're willing to do and meet me halfway. And most of them will say yes. There have been two that actually asked me, what exactly do you mean, meet you halfway? Well, I lived in Louisiana. I lived 1 hour and 10 minutes from downtown New Orleans, 1 hour from Baton Rouge, 1.5 hours from Jackson, Mississippi, and 1.5 hours from Gulfport, Biloxi. So I'm not close to any big, large recovery places. I'm in the country. And what I meant by meeting me halfway is you'll see me, but you'll have to come to see me, and it doesn't have to be at my house. One guy I asked me to sponsor him after his sponsor died, and he just run at me right away and said, would you sponsor me? And I said, you know, we'll discuss this. And we talked about it, and he lived 9 hours away from me. And I was in his town, or at least within 2 hours of him, 8 times in the next year. And I did not see him at all, because he made the point to work as opposed to coming to see me just once. And I told him the last time, I said, a week before we had a sponsorship retreat in Florida, I said, Charles, I'm not sure why you don't trust me, but you evidently don't trust me. I'm going to be here. If you're not there, I hope you find a sponsor, because I can't continue to do this if you're not willing to meet me halfway, and you've been unwilling to meet me at all. Midnight, Friday night, he walks into a cafeteria where I'm at, picks up a cup of coffee, and I tell the guy I'm talking to, I said, be right back. I said, I got a bed for you. Where you at? We'll talk tomorrow. Because he had drove almost 12 hours to get there by himself. But that told me some things. Now he's got 30 years. I've been sponsoring him for 30 years. And he's one of those guys you can't get rid of. Okay? I say something about writing the steps. He said, when, where, and how long. He is wonderful about doing exactly the things that he's been at. But the only thing I really want from somebody is to try to help them when they need it, be the best person that they can be a better person than they ever have been, and it has nothing to do with the person that I am. I don't try to teach you how to do it my way. I try to help you learn how to do it your way. And that's one of the things that I feel is really important in the similarities and the differences, is not try to be a person that they have to follow along, but make their own route, but just get them headed in the right direction. This is about enough time for this workshop to be our end done. Do we have any questions that anybody would like to ask? Now's the time for it, please. Would you come to the microphone, please? Thank you.
I'm Jonathan. I'm
Hey, Jonathan.
I was hearing everything I was saying, and I really liked and enjoyed it, because I think Rick kind of hit the nail on the head in the beginning of basic text or anywhere all the way through. When I could feel others, which I was the first day, I feel like you were here to save my life. Like I was a little baby. But that's always the part, the difference. So don't y'all think that that makes it to where the differences aren't even really that important, but the similarities are what can save our life. Thank y'all.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you. Thank
you,
Jonathan.
Was that a question?
Yeah.
Jonathan, was that a question? What you just asked?
Like, yeah, like, how do you look at, like, when we're talking about this, that, like, empathy is changed. So, you can feel for, like, he's talking about the predecessors, and but then we have those yet to come. You can feel the desire in somebody.
Can you repeat the question for the team?
Yeah, I'm still not clear on the question.
What do you think about empathy?
What do I think about empathy and how that relates to the similarities?
Yeah.
Okay.
He's from Alabama. You got to wait a while.
Yeah,
take him a while to get it together.
We're 2 weeks behind everywhere. I didn't know that until I moved to Oklahoma. Nothing's really coming up. Did one of you guys have anything to share, Patsy?
I don't know. Empathy in itself is to be able to put yourself in another one's shoes. You know, to be able to feel what others feel. And we have a feelings disease, but also the way that we relate to each other and the way we can identify with each other, empathy has to be involved. You know, like I said, empathy was one of the spiritual principles that, you know, instead of judging you and instead of taking your inventory, you know, I want to have empathy for you because I know where you were. I remember what it was like when I was new. You know, and that's how we go forward and move forward to helping each other and what you want to do about your problem and how I can help. When I first came in here, I didn't have any empathy for anybody. I just wanted, you know, me to be fixed. But when you get, once you grow in the, when I grew in the program, it's just another step in the program is to be able to have that empathy and give back.
Thank you. Bonnie, you have a question? You had a question?
Yeah.
Let him use this one. You want to use this one?
We will
miss it. My name is Ronnie. I'm ahead.
Hey, Ronnie.
So my question would be, Pat, seems like the right? Okay. Coming from a professional background, was there ever a time where ego kept from being able to see some of the similarities, and if so, how did you work past that?
Absolutely. Like I said, my ego when I came in here was like, don't you see everything I had? And everything I had, I lost. You know, and that was the biggest difference I had in between is that, you know, I lost all that stuff. And I had it all in active addiction and lost it. And that would separate me from you. But, you know, the step work, taking my own inventory, working on my own character defects, and that just showed me that anonymity is something that I'm just like everybody else. I am just an addict, and I was just as sick as anyone else. No one was more sick or less sick than me, but all I can say is that I had a personality change, and my ego was there, absolutely, but for me, all the results and all the growth has come from working the steps, doing all the suggestions my sponsor has suggested, and just continuing on doing the next right thing and working my recovery every single day.
We got about 5 minutes left. Anybody else? Come on.
I'm Josh from Natick.
Hey, Josh.
For you, Patsy, you said you had to come to the program to be able to practice medicine again. Did you ever get to do that?
Can you repeat the question?
So he asked about, I had a company, was practicing medicine, and was I ever able to practice again? And I am in what's called the peer program in Oklahoma for nurses. It's like drug court for nurses. And I'm so special, I get to be in it until. anyway, Anyway, once I meet the qualifications, I can graduate from that program. But the different qualifications, right now I am practicing as an RN, but by training I'm a nurse practitioner. So until I can meet their guidelines as a nurse practitioner under their program, right now it's as an RN. It's been a huge thing because I'm okay no matter what. And that's been so huge for me because my career was like my left arm. I've been a nurse since I was 20 years old and I'm 52 today. It was a part of me. And so being able to come to that acceptance and no matter what happens to me in my professional life, as long as I stay clean and I work my program of recovery, I'm going to be okay. And that was one of the most freeing things that I have obtained in my recovery. And that was solely through working the steps. I wasn't like that at first. I had a lot of resentments and a lot of, it's your damn fault, and you know, oh, poor me, I'm having to do all this stuff. Today I'm grateful for the peer program, because if I would have gotten out in a couple years, I would have been back out to using, so.
Anybody else? We would like to thank you, and we are very appreciative of the committee asking us to be a part of this. Thank y'all very much.